fantastic. Anyway, as many of you know, there is going to be, or potentially going to be, a tax on those of you who have been using your homes for Airbnb purposes.
Oh, there's going to be, starting July 1st, sons of bitches.
And on the phone list to talk about that is Rob Stevens. He is the owner and creator of Avalara MyLodge Tax. It's software that all these places wind up using. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Very good. You know, Rob, I just came back from 2 weeks down at the Villages in Florida, and for the last probably 10 years, I've never used Airbnb. I've used HomeAway. I forget the name of the other one. H, or the one with letters.
VRBO.
VRBO. And thankfully, in Florida, they don't charge this tax. Speak.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because on short-term rentals in Florida, they actually do charge sales and tourist tax, similar to what Massachusetts is enacting.
All right, maybe I was wrong. So, I'll look at the contract.
But this Massachusetts tax, though, I mean, how does it differ very much from the kind of tax that's imposed on regular hotels and motels?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. It really doesn't. I think that's what's happening here in Massachusetts. And, you know, like I alluded to, this is really what happens across the U.S. and every other state. Massachusetts has been kind of an exception for short-term rentals. But basically, that's what's happening now. They're going to change the laws to tax short-term rental properties the same way a hotel is taxed.
But it says here in the article that cities and towns can choose to add an additional 6% local excise tax and a 3% community impact fee. Are those two different things also added to hotel taxes?
So the first one is, the 6% is the same tax that a hotel would pay. It's just the municipalities in Massachusetts now have to go through it administratively, approve that, which I suspect they will do. So that's very much the same tax that a hotel and motel would pay. The second tax is, you know, my understanding, those look like new prospective fees for the industry for short-term rentals.
So in a situation like you're in, I mean, you work with Airbnb and VRBO and HomeAway and all these other, you know, companies that offer these kinds of services. From your perspective, these new taxes, very easily the homeowner could pass that tax off to the person staying in the home. It may not necessarily affect the person, you know, giving up their home. I mean, they could always pass it off to the consumer, right?
Yeah, that's exactly how these taxes are designed to work, and that's, you know, that's what we often tell our customers, is that, you know, this is a consumer tax. It's no different than, you know, walking into a store and buying a shirt and you pay sales tax. So when you stay in a hotel, you know, we've all seen it on our bill. They you know, tack on, you know, 10, 12, 15% tax. Short-term rentals are really no different. It's a tax the traveler pays. If you book on a lot of the big websites like HomeAway and VRBO, you know, that tax rate is, you know, it's built into their booking system. It's charged to the traveler when the property is booked, and you pay on your credit card. So, you know, it really is a tax to the consumer. For the host or the homeowner, it's, you know, their obligation is to collect the tax and then, you know, remit it to the different agencies involved.
Now, there's going to be a registry that gets kept by the state, and I assume this information will be included on that registry, but the rental unit operators will have to have $1 million liability insurance policy. Does the average homeowner's insurance cover up to $1 million, or is this, for most people, going to be above and beyond their homeowners?
No, this is going to be something new, and I'm not in the insurance industry, but, you know, I handle the tax part of it. But broadly speaking, your typical homeowner's policy actually doesn't cover short-term rentals, because when you're doing short-term rentals, that's actually considered a business activity. And so what's happened in our industry is there's a bunch of specialty insurance providers that have evolved to actually cover this type of risk. So, you know, $1 million is certainly a high threshold, but you know, we are increasingly starting to see that in other locations.
But if you're saying
we'll need to get special insurance.
So what you're saying now is the average person who's renting out space in their home or their entire home to renters does not have this insurance.
Well, correct. I mean, if you're relying on a standard homeowner's policy, that probably doesn't cover you if the renter is in there and something happens. Because that's typically outside the context of a normal homeowner's
policy. So if the state is maintaining a register and everyone who wants to rent their home or a room in their home has to register with the state and then you're found to be in violation, are there going to be fines and enforcement?
Yeah, good question. It's not clear to me. I think that, you know, the law was just signed, I think, you know, at the end of 2018. You know, mechanically how they're going to get everyone to register and then how they're going to enforce it. I mean, you know, frankly speaking, it's very common. We're increasingly seeing, you know, heightened regulations for short-term rentals across the U.S. How a state or a city or a government agency it really enforces that and gets everyone to register can be a real challenge.
This is Rob Stevens from Avalara. It's my tax lodge, my lodge tax software. One of the things that would be in play here in the Massachusetts law is that a homeowner would have to rent out their house for at least 2 weeks to be
in a year.
In a year. To be taxed at that rate. It seems to me that by doing it that way or by having that stipulation in the law, that the state may open themselves to all kinds of fraud and loopholes if someone designates their place as their home as a place to stay, but you may be able to work out arrangements where maybe someone's stay isn't reported. I mean, I would think that you open yourself up to a lot of problems that way.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that's fair, and we see that across the U.S. I mean, I think the intent is good, right? For people that this is really a nominal activity, it's really infrequent. They're doing it less than 14 days a year. We're not going to make them follow some of these regulations. So the intent is good. The problem is exactly what you said. Once you put in those kind of little loopholes, then, you know, people kind of see that and say, well, I don't know if I'm going to rent more than 2 weeks or not. We'll see how it goes. And it creates a perception that people can maybe just delay or not make a decision. Or, you know, they can, if they are renting a little bit and they feel like if I'm contacted, boy, I'll just tell the government agent I'm doing less than 2 weeks a year and how are they going to prove it? So, we do find that those things do open the door for people to kind of, make an excuse that this isn't something they have to do.
You know, when I'm down in the villages, and maybe this is a little bit different because it's a 55 and over community, so they probably don't expect an awful lot of noise or an awful lot of problems. So, and many of the people who buy houses down there buy them as rental properties. But like I can remember when I was a young man living in a kind of an affluent town down in Connecticut with two other women that I basically just answered an ad in the newspaper. Eventually, I was thrown out of the house because the town had an ordinance that many towns do, that three or more people who were not related by blood could not live in the same house.
And your landlord, the Ropers,
yes,
kept a good eye on you,
exactly,
right?
Yeah. Until I was able to convince them I was gay and that Chrissy was, in fact, my beard. But I mean, I know there's a lot of like anti-boarding house laws out there, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's not something we follow closely. I've heard of the types of laws, and we'll see it sometimes and hear about there. You can't have more than, a certain number of unrelated parties living together. I mean, my view and my take on that is those are virtually unenforceable. The only time we see people maybe have those kind of issues, if there's an issue and you've got a neighbor really sensitive to it, and they constantly complain, maybe the city will look into it and figure it out. I don't know what happened in your case, but
that was it.
It's extremely rare where we see that actually become a problem.
Rob, how do these new taxes affect the hotel industry itself, the legitimate, hotel chains and that? I mean, are there negative ramifications for them, or do they stand to benefit out of this?
Well, I think I don't think it's negative for them. I think it puts the short-term rental industry, the hotel industry would probably say that they're competing against now. I mean, the short-term rental industry has become very popular. So I think now it puts them on an equal playing field that if you're a traveler and you're looking at staying in a hotel versus a rental home, you know, the tax part is now equal, and so the hotel's not at a disadvantage. I think that's how they would say it and to think about it.
I suppose this is, you know, this is just like everybody trying to make sure that things that have been happening for 100 years that got changed by the internet, whether it's Amazon being able to sell items tax-free or Airbnb being able to give accommodations tax-free, it's really just basically industries trying to catch up to the cyber version of their previous physical version.
That is, I think, absolutely spot on. You know, when these laws were written, people thought of, you know, inns and hotels, real businesses, and along comes technology, you know, internet, cultural changes, and really it's become very easy for anybody to rent their second home, their primary home, you know, the extra room, and so it's become very popular. And that's, you know, it was never contemplated when they wrote these laws. And I think that's part of what's happening in Massachusetts and across the U.S. as communities and states grapple with, you know, how do we now adapt to this new type of lodging and accommodation?
But I think
and apply regulations and taxes against it.
But I think what's important is to make certain that you don't exceed what the real world fees are. In other words, just because Amazon is selling you something on the internet should not have to pay a higher sales tax than anyone who buys the same item at retail within the state. The Airbnb should not be forced to pay a higher tax than the hotel down the street.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly agree with that. I mean, look, travelers love this type of accommodation. It's here to stay. You know, there's pockets and there's groups that aren't thrilled with it, but it's a very powerful way to travel. It's a very efficient way for some people and some, you know, it for families and groups. It's often a much better option than hotels. And you know, you're just not going to, just like Amazon, you're not going to take e-commerce away or, you know, now like newspapers and magazines, media is changing, you know, your world, these things are happening. And it's, you know, I certainly agree that it would be unfair to punish the kind of the new and upcoming industry that's really innovating and delivering value to homeowners and travelers.
I mean, I can see some people wanting to rent out their own house, but there are people who rent out rooms while they stay in the house. I don't even want somebody I'm having sex with to stay in another room of the house overnight. You know, it's my house.
I'm sure they would be looking to escape too. Rob Stevens, again, the owner and creator of Avalara.com. We appreciate the time today, Rob. Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
It's 820 with Bax and O'Brien on Rock 102.
Hey, football genius, show us you have.